The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Origins of Babylon in Ancient History, number 2. The third message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Babylon, Past, Present, and Future, given for the second day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Eugene, Oregon, October 1st, 2023.
So yesterday on the first high day of Tabernacles, we examined the physical origins of Babylon. I started on the opening night with describing from the book of Revelation what God said he's going to do and what Jesus Christ is going to do when he returns and the fact that he is going to vanquish Babylon and some of the aspects recorded in a number of those key chapters in Revelation that talk about what this Babylon is and especially to emphasize the fact that God hates it. And God is going to destroy it. And at the very same time in chapter 18, he commands us, he admonishes his chosen people to come out. So that's what the whole purpose of my messages during this 8-day feast for you are. To analyze this command that God gives us this order to come out of this thing called Babylon. And so we need to understand what it is. How it's manifested, if we can even have a hope to accomplish this. So we began yesterday to examine the physical origins of Babylon. And I started with King Nebuchadnezzar, and then I said, no, it wasn't him. Although his kingdom, his empire, was a significant manifestation, it was a world-ruling empire, and it certainly was very significant in the plan of God. But that wasn't the origin. So we're looking for the origin, the true origin of this thing called Babylon. Because when you get to the root of it, when you get to what it is at its inception, then you have the tools to begin to see how it applies to you and how it applies to me and what we need to do. So we went back to Genesis 10 and 11, because there we find the description of Babel, which is the precursor to Babylon. And we saw what God recorded concerning Nimrod and the attempt then to basically build a organized, controlled, authoritarian society managed by Nimrod and his cohorts to build a city. And we saw that it was in opposition to God's will. So God said to do one thing and Nimrod and his cohorts said, no, we have our own plan. And so we can derive that because of the fact that God thwarted what they were doing. So it must have been wrong by confounding the languages and dispersed the peoples according to nations and tribes, according to languages as God dictated. He forced them to do what he'd asked them or told them to do to begin with. But man will do that for a short time until they can find another way to rebel. And so God delayed the ultimate oppression of all peoples and all nations under a one world counterfeit system for the time being. But here we are in the last days, and it's, you know, we're in the midst of it now. And the noose is tightening. And I think many of you under the hearing of my voice feel it. So we saw at the very close, I don't know how many of you understood, probably maybe a lot of you did, but some of you I bet didn't, the fact that God actually called Abram out of Babylon because he was of a royal family in Chaldea, which is just another word for Babylon. We're still talking about that same area of the Middle East, the land of Shinar, and that's where Abram was born. And so God, do you think it was coincidental? Obviously, it wasn't. God did it symbolically for a reason. That this man who ultimately changed his name to Abraham and became the father of the faithful, which you can read in Hebrews chapter 11. And what was so significant? So there's a man that's held up by God as an example of what he wants to see in us. And you know the significant things that Abraham did in his life. But it started because he came out of Babylon by a call of God. And he did pick up and he came out and then became a valuable instrument. So I asked the question, was Nimrod the real origin? And as I answered to you, no, he wasn't even the origin. But that's where Babel technically started, right? So how could it be anything but the inception? Because to come out of Babylon today, we've got to recognize God's deeper intent and the issue that God cares about. And when he wants us to come out of Babylon, he's talking about something more significant. What does God care about? God cares about our orientation of mind. Anything physical he commands us to do is secondary or cursory to the real change he wants you and me to make in our thinking, in our way of processing and making choices. The spirit of Babylon is what he will defeat along with the physical manifestation in the last days. But the spirit of Babylon is the main thing he's going to root out. Because remember, I mentioned to you in Daniel 2 yesterday with that dream that Nebuchadnezzar had concerning the image with the head of gold. And remember, I mentioned to you that when Christ ultimately destroys it, he doesn't just destroy the manifestation of Babylon that exists physically in the day of his second coming. He destroys the entire image all the way back to the beginning. And how do you do that? When Nebuchadnezzar and the Persian kings and Alexander the Great of the Greeks and the Caesars of Rome have been dead in their grave for a long, long time. So how does he destroy them when they're already dead? We're talking about a destruction ultimately of what Babylon represents symbolically. And when Christ destroys it, as he begins to rule on this earth, he's going to destroy not only the last manifestation of that false system on the earth physically, he's going to destroy everything that it pictures and goes all the way back to the beginning. Let's start again in Revelation 18, 23. What's this spirit of Babylon? It's rooted in rebellion against God's instructions. That's what we're talking about. Revelation 18, and I'm not going to start at the beginning of 23, pick up in the middle of verse 23. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived, and in her was found the blood of the prophets and the saints and all that were slain upon the earth. And this last part is very easy to read over, but it gives you a huge clue, which we're going to analyze today. In her was found, whatever this system is that God hates, he calls it Babylon, and he's going to root it out. In her was found the blood of the prophets, of the saints, and all that were slain upon the earth. Every human murder, God says here through the Apostle John, was laid at the feet of Babylon. What does that tell us? I'm answering the question, did Babylon begin with Nimrod and the city that was first called Babel because the language was confounded and that's where the name came from? No. Where was the first murder? You want to find out where Babylon began? God said everyone who was slain in the human family was slain by Babylon. Does that give you a hint? Oh, you're going to say it was Cain, and I'm still going to say no. We're going to talk about Cain. Nimrod was not the first rebel. Who was the first one? Cain wasn't the first rebel. Where did deception originate? Where did murder originate? Revelation 12, verse 9. It all started with Satan the devil. Revelation 12, verse 9, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. We're talking about a deceiver, right? Babylon deceives all inhabitants of the earth in every nation and is responsible for every murder. So where do you look? That old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. There's the description of the first rebellion against God. It was angelic, not human. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 3. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 3. But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are actually progressively being lost in the process of walking on a path that will end in their demise. In whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not. Who is the God of this world? Same being, Satan. The God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. Two different ways of thinking. Christ is represented by the way of light, and Satan by a way of darkness and deception and confusion. The fabric of Satan's worldwide deception is Babylonianism. That's what it really is. The fabric of Satan's worldwide deception is called Babylonianism. Now, it's also called a lot of other things. But I'm focusing on Babylon as the moniker in particular, because that's the one in the book of Revelation that we care about, that God uses to focus upon his activities that we celebrate in the fall season with trumpets and atonement and the Feast of Tabernacles and the last great day. And so Babylon is the target. Now, it could be Egypt. And we're going to talk a little bit about Egypt, but not very much. It's the same thing. Pharaoh in Egypt, King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, Nimrod in Babylon, it doesn't matter. Because they all have one thing in common. They all gain their inspiration from the invisible enemy, Satan the devil. That's where it begins. Luke 4, verse 5. Luke 4, beginning in verse 5, the devil taking him up into the high mountain. This is the temptation of Jesus Christ before he began his 3.5-year ministry. Now, Jesus himself had to be proven to have the wherewithal to resist the influence of this invisible enemy. The devil, taking him up into a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time, like a vision. And the devil said unto him, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me. And here's an example where Satan didn't lie. Now, he's a liar, but he's a deceiver. And the most effective deceit is when you mix truth with lies. If you just tell a bald-faced lie, people are more likely to recognize that. But if you mix a lot of truth, even with a little bit of a lie, that is the best way to actually get somebody to bite and to absorb it. In this case, Satan is telling the truth. He's not assuming the right to be the God of this world or to rule over the kingdoms of men right now. God actually allowed that. And remember, we talked yesterday about the fact that God was the sponsor of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire. It only existed and it only had that power and that reach and that dominion over all peoples of the known world at the time because God gave it to him. So God was responsible for Babylon. Well, in the very same way, guess what? God is responsible for the existence of a devil. God did not create a devil. But God is responsible for the fact that that rebel has continued to have the latitude to roam upon this earth. And he still holds an office which God originally gave to him, and his name was Lucifer. And he simply hasn't taken that away from him yet. He will. So again, God's responsible because he's permitted it. The buck stops with God in everything. So here, Satan is not lying when he says to Jesus, "All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine." And had Jesus agreed to this proposal, this deal with the devil, then Jesus literally could have immediately ruled the earth under the auspices of Satan the devil, who had the authority by God. What was the catch? Any agent of Satan could only rule as long as Satan himself had authority to rule, which means it was a limited job. Because when God the Father removed Satan, then all of his agents would have been removed as well. The entire government structure under Satan is demolished. So had Jesus taken him up, he could have ruled for a temporary period of time, but then ultimately he would not have ruled anymore because Satan is not going to rule anymore. So there was the deception, there was the twist. But Jesus didn't fall for it, thankfully, even after he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, was in a physically weakened condition, but spiritually he was in peak condition. And therefore, you know how it came out. So he rejected it. But the point is, Satan had that authority. God allowed. The next, Isaiah 14, verse 12. Isaiah 14, beginning in verse 12. A description of, and we're going to read both from Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, because these are the best two passages that describe that transition that happened when a beautiful, glorious archangel actually chose rebellion and turned into a devil. Isaiah 14, verse 12, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer?" That was his original name. "Son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations?" How did he weaken the nations? Because he made himself an enemy of man. He hates you. He hates every human being who has ever been born or ever will be born, very likely because he's jealous of the fact that God instituted a plan that would allow you and me to actually be immortalized as full, powerful members of the God family, and that was never offered to any of the angels, including Lucifer. And so, you know, God and the angels do not live in on a timeline, but we talk in terms of time, we can't help it. At what point, referencing time, did Lucifer choose to rebel? Because he wasn't a rebel, and then at some point in time, he became a rebel. He chose, by his own volition, to reject the rules and the institutions of his master, because he thought he had a better way himself. And Mr. Armstrong originally speculated that it was likely his jealousy over your potential to be what he wanted to be. And so it makes perfect sense. If it's something else, fine, but that fits in my mind. That the reason he hates you so much and wants to destroy you is because he's jealous of you. You were created in the image of God. He was not. Oh, he was created a beautiful being, but he wasn't created in the image of God. You were. And so he can't have it. God won't let him. He rebelled, right? He got cast back down. He thought he was stronger than he was. He never had a chance to dethrone God. So he got cast back down. So he couldn't do that. So the next best thing is to try to undermine the plan and the purpose of God by destroying you and me and all humanity. He would love it so that none of us, quote unquote, qualify to be changed by God and given immortality. Because that's the best way he could try to defeat the plan of God. Well, he didn't, because Jesus Christ is our Savior qualified. He couldn't stop him. Thank God. But the next best thing is to try and defeat as many human beings, individual, as possible, so they do not achieve that ultimate goal. So that's why he's your enemy. That's why he hates you. Which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. He wanted to be in charge of all the angels as God was. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation. That means in the highest position of authority, which is God's office, in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Arrogant, presumptuous. So that's his orientation. He made God his enemy. He made God his rival. I have as much right as God does to make decisions and to rule. And he was going to take his place by force. There's your orientation of the enemy. It's rebellious against the authority of God. Ezekiel 28, verse 13. The philosophy is simply, here's how I see it. That's the satanic philosophy. I know the Bible says this, or God says this, or somebody claiming to have authority says this, but this is how I see it. So where do you think that started? Because every human being I know expresses that in one way or another, sooner or later. It started with Satan. It started with Lucifer, who became Satan. This is how I see it. This is what I think is right. This is the way I think it should be. This is what I think we should do. Mind you, Nimrod? God said, disperse out in your assigned national habitat in the part of the earth where I want you to be, and I'll bless you. Nimrod and his cohort said, no, this is how I see it. Let's keep us all together in one city state. We'll be stronger together. We'll create our own rules. We'll create our own paradise. We don't need God and his commandments to dictate that. We have the right and the ability to make our own future. This is how I see it. Ezekiel 28, verse 13, thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Why? Because Lucifer was originally assigned by God as a caretaker for the earth. And we're talking about, now I recently completed a series, was it 10 sermons more, however many I did on the Genesis creation to reaffirm the faith once delivered concerning the history of Genesis chapter 1 and 2. That there was an original beautiful creation, but not one that had man by God's design. And then ultimately it was destroyed by Lucifer, who became Satan. That war in heaven that we've already seen. And only in a recreation, when God put it back together after the hissy fit that Satan threw and destroyed the surface of the earth, did God recreate it and put man upon it. So Lucifer was in on the earth. He was the caretaker. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardius, topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, the carbuncle, the gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. I don't know how to describe all the manifestations, but the sense that you get is that God created him a beautiful being, an awe-inspiring angel. Verse 14, thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, referring to one aspect of his assignment. The prestige to be one of the two archangels who actually serve at the very throne of God with their wings outstretched. Actually immortalized, if you will, in God's instruction to Moses and how to build the Ark of the Covenant with that gold cover called the mercy seat and the instructions to have the images of these two angels like statues as a part of the mercy seat, which gives you an allusion to something real at the throne of God. And Lucifer was one of them until he rebelled. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth. I mean, what angel could have received more prestige, recognition than did Lucifer? God says, and I have set thee so. It was by the appointment of God that he had all of that beauty and that glory and that prestige. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created. See, God didn't create a devil. He created a perfect angel. But what God also did was he gave every single one of those angels free choice. That's the kicker. If you give a being free choice, and I mean it's not the illusion of free choice, you know, like you do with a little child, and what do the child psychologists say? You don't want to punish them to make them do what's right. You want to give them choices. But you give them two choices. Either one leads you to what you want all along. So no matter if they pick A or they pick B, they're doing exactly what you want, but it seems like you're giving them a choice rather than dictating. Would you like this or would you like this? And either way, the parent wins. That's not what God was doing here. When he gives a being free choice, they truly have the choice between good and evil. They get to pick. It's not an illusion. And Lucifer and one third of God's holy angels said they chose not to follow the government, the structure, the rules, the environment that God created to be good. This is the way I see it, said they. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. God didn't create iniquity in him. Lucifer turned to iniquity by rejecting the instruction of God. That was all on him. By the multitude of thy merchandise. And I'll just say that's all of the wealth and the power and the beauty that Lucifer had because of the gift of God. That was his merchandise, the substance that he did control and possess. By the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. So there's your first manifestation of a spirit of violence. It preceded any human being ever being on the earth, didn't it? Yes, because that rebellion took place long before human beings were on the earth. So it's not Adam and Eve and it's not Cain. That's not the root of it. And again, so this brings us back to the fact that you have to believe the faith once delivered concerning the Genesis creation in order to really put all these pieces together. That this rebellion happened first, and then Satan destroyed the surface of the earth, which had to be recreated before man was ever placed on it for the first time. So the rebellion was angelic, not human. And all of the, and many of these very sincere Protestants don't believe that. Because they twist the scripture and interpret it according to the fact that, you know, Eve and Adam had to be the ones that sinned first and then Satan's sin came later. No, it didn't. By the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned, violated the law. That's what sin is, the transgression of the law. Therefore, I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. He didn't destroy him physically because Lucifer and all the angelic host are immortal beings by God's creation, which means they don't die. But by destroying him out of the mountain of God, that means he removed him from that office as a cherub and cast him and those rebels who sought to take over the very throne of God and cast them back down to the earth, right here. And guess what? Then left this rebel in charge. He was originally assigned as a caretaker over the earth, and God didn't remove that office from him, which is why he's still the God of this world, which is why he was able to say to Jesus, all of this power I will give to you because it's given to me. He was telling the truth because God has not yet removed that authority from him. But he is misusing his office, as you know. Instead of taking care of the earth and helping the human family, he has become our enemy. And he seeks to destroy the earth, and he especially seeks to destroy you. So there's the perfect example of abuse of office. The epitome of the abuse of an assigned office that's supposed to be used to help and instead is used to destroy. So where's the violence? Well, he attempted to assault the throne of God. That didn't work out, but it was a violent act. And as we were taught, the physical manifestation in the heavens is evident, especially anytime you look at the moon, like here we are, the full moon, which began this Feast of Tabernacles on Friday night. And if you had a clear sky and could see it, you see all the pockmarks on the moon. We were always taught that was likely a result of the physical war in heaven that took place originally by the rebellion of Satan. So Lucifer's rebellion against God and his attempt to set up a competitive master plan. That's what it was. Didn't he have his own master plan? God said, here's my master plan. I'm going to create human beings and they're going to be added and fill out the God family. There's going to be millions and billions who are called God. And a perfectly unified, powerful family who will be kings and priests and will reign in a dispersed universe where creation will continue to take place in the future. And Lucifer said, that's not fair. The way I see it, me and these other angels should have more God than what you have included in your master plan. So we're going to set up our own master plan where we get to be the prima donnas. It's a counterfeit master plan. The competitive master plan of Satan is the essence of Babylon. That's what it is. I've been stringing you along for the last three sermons. There it is. It's the answer in the back of the book. Babylon is any competitive idea or concept in opposition to the will and the purpose of God. That's what Babylonianism is. And God highlighted Lucifer, who became Satan, as the first, as its champion. It's not just a thing, so Satan's the bad guy. Okay, I got it. No, seriously. If you look at what God recorded in his Bible to tell us concerning the role of this rebellion and how it impacts the human family, then it makes the book of Revelation make perfect sense. And then you can go back and read Revelation 14 and 17 and 18 and 20. And this description of this beast being ridden by a whore, symbolically. And all of the abominations that come out of that he calls Babylon the Great, which Jesus Christ is going to destroy, then it should make more sense. John 8:44. This is from the mouth of Jesus Christ. This is what he said during his ministry on the earth. To the Jews, who were physical Israelites, they had the pedigree. They went all the way back to the original peoples who God brought out of Egypt. And here they're contending with Jesus Christ, calling him a bastard and saying, we're the true people of God because we have the physical pedigree. And ultimately, what did Christ say to them? John 8:44, you are of your father, the devil. And the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning. Interesting, isn't it? That's why I said Cain wasn't the first murderer, because here are the words of Jesus Christ out of his own mouth. So you explain that. If you think Cain was the first one who committed murder, then why did Jesus say he was a murderer from the beginning? Has to be an answer. He, referring to the devil, was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth. That was his fault. If you want to sum up what Babylonianism is, it's failure to abide in the truth. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. So we find out that he's a murderer from the beginning and he's the father of all lies. What did we read in Revelation about the hallmark? One of the hallmarks of this Babylonian system, it's deceive the whole world. Well, how do you deceive if you're not lying? Is there any such thing as perpetrating deception that can be separated from lying? No. Because it was done intentionally with purpose. So he's the father of lies. That tells you where Babylon starts. He's the father of lies, and he was a murderer from the beginning. Now, who did he murder? Because when he and a third of those angels rebelled against God and sought to and created that war in heaven, nobody got killed, right? Because we're talking about all immortal beings. God the Father and the one who became Jesus Christ, God of the second part, were immortal, so they couldn't die and didn't die. And none of the angels died. So where was the murder? And how is it that to Satan, from the beginning, is ascribed to him murder? Well, ultimately, from the time that he rebelled and then set his intent to undermine the purposes of God, he set out on a course of murder. Now, if you can say murder can't happen until a human being exists, I agree with you. Which means the fulfillment of it couldn't happen until Adam and Eve were created and they began to have children. But again, remember I said we're talking about the spirit of Babylon. Not just a physical act, we're talking about an orientation of mind, and there's the root of it. So the reason Jesus Christ accurately called him a murderer from the beginning is not because a physical being actually lost their life and that's the beginning. It's because he embraced a philosophy of rebellion that would result in murder. And it makes perfect sense then, if that was the trigger that caused him to become jealous because he didn't get what God, he didn't agree with what God was doing. In jealousy, then he turned his intent to kill you. So even before any human being ever came into existence upon the earth, his intent was to kill you. That's why he was a murderer from the beginning. Where did this murderous philosophy actually first manifest? Now you can turn to Genesis 4. And I'll remind you again that in Revelation 18:24, Babylon is held responsible for all blood spilled upon the earth. Every single death of any human being who has ever lived. God holds Babylon. Whatever is involved in Babylon is responsible for every human murder. Here was the first one recorded. Genesis 4, verse 8. Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. There's where the murderous philosophy of Satan was manifested in the action of Cain against Abel. But how did that happen? Because if Satan is, Christ said, was a murderer from the beginning, how did that interface with Cain? Here's another doctrine that's a part of the true church and no other church. God took the rebellious, murderous nature of that original adversary and put it intentionally in the mind of human beings. He created Adam and Eve, and by extension, all of their progeny, with a rebellious bent toward rebellion. And I emphasize that again because that was one of those doctrines that was changed by a parent organization in the mid-70s. They don't teach that anymore. And any of these groups are out here having a quote-unquote Feast of Tabernacles, they don't believe that. Because the worldwide ministry with the sign-off of Mr. Armstrong in his old age changed to say, oh no, do you think a little baby is born with evil, rebellious nature? Oh no. Little babies are born neutral, neither good nor evil. It's just they quickly tune into Satan's wavelength and it makes them evil. But if it weren't for Satan, we wouldn't be evil at all. That's what they believe and teach. And I'm telling you, it's a deadly philosophy. It's not inconsequential. Because you cannot understand the source of what Babylon is and what it takes to defeat it unless you recognize the source of it. And if you think that you would be okay if it weren't for Satan in the world, because if only God was broadcasting, if I was a neutral being by nature and Satan is set aside, like in the millennium, and the only wavelength is being broadcast on by Jesus Christ, if I'm neutral and I hear the message only of Jesus Christ, I become good. So what they believe, although they'll never admit it, when pinned down on it, is that babies who were born in the millennium when Satan is not there are all going to be good. There's going to be no sin. There's going to be no spirit of rebellion in them. Because if rebellion only comes from the influence of Satan, not from the natural nature of man, then an innocent little baby inspired only by God's government is naturally going to be good. And they will not commit sin. I never heard any of them address the ramifications of their philosophy. You got to take it to the extent and say, if this is true, what does that mean? So there was a huge change in the Church of God, and most do not even realize it still. Now, I've cited to you a number of times, you go back to the correspondence course lessons from the 1960s. Is it lesson 21 through 24, 25, whatever? And there's a whole section of those lessons that emphasize that truth that God intentionally took the rebellious nature of Satan and put it in to man. So that even without Satan, human beings of their own accord are rebellious. We are hardwired to hate and to reject and to resist the law of God. You don't need Satan to do that. Yes, it started with Satan. He was a murderer from the beginning. He is the father of lies. But God took that rebellion and then put it in Adam and Eve. So you can wipe Satan off the chessboard now. And the rebellion still exists in all of us. You didn't absorb it. You already had it. Which is also what the Bible says. I'm not going to turn to all those that, you know, that's a separate topic. You can look all of this up. Look it up in the old correspondence course. That's what was taught if you care about it. If you think Jesus Christ established that church, go see what they taught for 40 years. But I'm telling you, it's also the key to understanding in the last day Babylon. And if you don't have the right teaching on human nature, you can't come out of Babylon. I don't know if anybody's ever said it that way. You can read Revelation all you want. You can hate Babylon, theoretically. You can say, boo, devil. But if you don't recognize what your own nature is by the plan and the purpose and the will of God, you can't come out. It's not about getting rid of Satan. It's about crucifying the self. You know, there's a reason that unleavened bread requires us to crucify the self. That's not Satan. That's what you and I are by nature. And if we're going to walk in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, even as he was willing to die, even though he was innocent, we have to be willing to die because we're guilty. Satan amplifies our rebellion, but he's not the source of our rebellion. And there, my dear friends, is the essence of the origin of Babylon. Started with the spirit of the rebellion of Lucifer, and then God took that rebellion, put it in human beings. So Cain killed his brother. Why? Because he was jealous. He was miffed at God and lashed out at the one who God did favor and accept. Just like Lucifer was miffed at God for not giving him enough power and prestige. But Cain would likely have done it with or without the influence of Satan. Satan just amplifies and helps us along. First John 3:11, for this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain. So here the apostle is inspired to use this contrast to what real love is, godly love, and comparing it to an antithesis. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and slew his brother. Oh, yes. Not because Cain was neutral and innocent until Satan polluted him, but because Cain's natural nature given by God absolutely agreed with the spirit of Satan. They're simpatico. They're kin in philosophy, which is why we so readily give in to Satan's temptation, because our natural mind is already there. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? If you want to know what was his motivation? Because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. It's the recipe for jealousy. Cain was doing the bidding of Satan because, as we saw, Christ said he was a murderer from the beginning. So how did Satan become responsible for murder? Because he encouraged and goaded Cain to kill his brother. Again, Satan's intent is to kill all of us. And that was his first success. But Cain was not innocent, except for the devil. Cain was responsible, which is why in Genesis chapter 4, you know, before the murder, God told him, why are you wroth? You know, why are you all out of sorts, Cain? Don't you understand? If you do good, which means respect the commandments and just do what I say, it turns out well. And if you don't, guess what that means? Sin is involved. Sin lies at the door. And what's the responsibility of Cain or any one of us? When things don't work out, when you feel that you are under a curse, when you feel that you are being disciplined by God, the answer is not to lash out at some other human being. It's to take stock of yourself. What do I need to change? Where have I been involved in some way, somehow, in a violation of a godly principle, which has now put me under a penalty or a curse of some kind? That's the right way to think about it. Not to say, well, that's not fair, so let me lash out at the one who God did favor. Because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. But it started before the murder, because his mom and dad were the first of the human beings who manifested the spirit of Babylonianism. Now turn back to Genesis 3. And we've read this already, but in this context, I want you to see it. Genesis 3, verse 1, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the eternal God had made. And he said unto the woman, Hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Did God give you instruction and say, do this and don't do that? "And the woman said unto the serpent, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." Good for her. She understood exactly the rule of God. She actually might have been better off if she didn't, if she was confused. But what she proved is that she perfectly understood what God said was right and what he said was wrong, what to do and what not to do. "And the serpent said unto the woman, You shall not surely lie or die." There's his first lie. In essence, he was saying, you're not really subject to death. That's just the threat of God to make you kowtow to him. But really, you're an immortal being already. And that's the lie that is a part of every religion around the earth right now, except for the truth. The fact that there is an immortal soul in man. You name me a religion that doesn't believe that and teach that. Only the Church of God does not teach the immortality of the human soul. So if you want to leave this church or the Church of God at large and think you're going to find a home in another church, what you will embrace is going to be a belief that human beings have a natural immortality, so that when you stop breathing, you just cast off a physical shell and your immortal soul flits off somewhere. And the religions all have a different belief on what happens. But what they all have in common is belief inherently that you will not die. That you will not die. God said, if you disrespect me, you're going to die. Satan says, no, you won't, because you're already immortal. And all inhabitants of the earth, except for the called of God, believe the lie. Part of Babylonianism, it's the root of it. You shall not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as God, knowing good and evil. Meaning you have within your own power the right to grasp this fruit. And yes, it's a magical fruit. If you eat it, you're going to gain something you don't have now. And God made that apparently to be true, because after she ate it, she gained an awareness she didn't have before. And so did Adam. They became aware for the first time that they were naked, and that wasn't even crossing their mind up until then. So again, Satan mixed truth with error to foster deceit upon the human family. And what did we learn in Revelation? Babylon has deceived the whole world. And Satan is the father of lies. And he was a murderer from the beginning. Now, do you see how it all comes together? Human beings manifest the rebellion on their own accord, but they actually take their inspiration from the father of lies and of murder, because that's who we agree with naturally. So this was Satan's first act of deception among human beings, deceiving Eve and Adam by extension. And it was the first expression of Babylonian philosophy in opposition to God's commands, because again, Babylonianism at its root is a rejection of the will of God. This is the way I see it, by somebody, either an angel or a human being. This is the way I see it. That's Babylonianism. What was the result? Genesis 3:23. Therefore, the eternal God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man. And he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way to the tree of life. God in love then prevented man from being able to grasp immortality in rebellion, which would have put him in the same category as the angels, who are still going to live forever, and yet being absolute rebels are going to be locked away forever. And God wasn't going to let that to happen to any human being. And according to his love, we are subject to death. And if we turn to the spirit of Babylonianism and refuse to repent, God will mercifully just let us go to sleep forever. That's the good news. The end result of Babylonianism is always the destruction of man. Remember, we started by saying, and quoting from God, God holds Babylon accountable for the death of every human being, the murder of every human being, including Cain, who murdered Abel. Genesis 6, verse 5. Because it's been sponsored by the enemy of man who's jealous of you and wants to destroy mankind. So isn't it ironic that you have all of these do-gooders on the world scene, including some of these great billionaires, and I will give them credit for having an altruistic desire to create a paradise on earth. I'll give a credit to some of them. I think the majority of them are greedy and just trying to get what they can off the backs of, you know, a system. But let's say that there are some of them, or many of them, who are sincere in believing that they have the ability with their money and their influence to create a paradise on this earth. So what? They're deceived and it's never going to happen. Because the one they're taking their marching orders from and listening to is the one who's trying to kill them too. So they're going to sponsor this totalitarian regime on the earth under the guise of saving mankind and solving poverty and bringing us out of the dark ages. But the end result of what they're doing is going to be to kill us all. Because Satan, who's still the god of this world by God's allowance, is trying to kill us all. So the end result of Babylonianism unchecked is to kill us all. Genesis 6, verse 5, God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth. Because once they were put out of the garden, they were left to do everything their way. They were not tethered to the commandments of God, which they hated by nature and inspired by Satan to rebel even more. And they decided to make up their own rules for a happy, healthy future. And what was the end result within 2,000 years? God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. What's evil? Anything that opposes the truth of God. It doesn't have to be evil in their thinking. No, human beings call evil good and good evil. So we're not talking about how they viewed what they were doing and what they were a part of. We're talking about how God assessed it. Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, and it repented the eternal that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him in his heart. No, he wasn't sorry. That's not what this means, and I can't take the time to go through it. He knows the end from the beginning and exactly what was going to happen when he gave free agency to all of these creatures. But he was sorry for them because of the suffering that they brought upon themselves and their children. He has that compassion. And in the short term, the best way to eliminate their suffering was to let them go to sleep. That's how you get rid of the suffering, go to sleep. And if you think death, then human death is the worst thing that could ever happen, then you think he was an evil God, which is how most people view that hard-hearted God of the Old Testament. But he wasn't. He was the one who became Jesus Christ, another doctrine most of them don't have. Your Savior was the one who made the decision to wipe them out with a flood for their own good, because there was going to be a resurrection in the future, which we celebrate this time of year. The Eternal said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repents me that I have made them because of their suffering. Verse 11, the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So they didn't admit they were evil, and yet they were actually perpetrating violence as a matter of course in their society of all manner. You want to know what kind? Well, look around you and see what's going on the earth today. Because Christ said what was happening in the days of Noah is exactly the way it's going to be in the last days. That gives you a clue. And God, verse 12, looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And so the only exception was Noah. So it doesn't even say Noah's wife, let alone Noah's three sons or their wives. There were eight that he saved, but Noah was the one that God gave credit for having a different way of thinking. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, and the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. So one of the hallmarks of a society in which the sins have come to the full, they are steeped evil in evil, diabolical rejection of the truth of God manifested in violence. Oh, well, there's violence in certain areas, but not in others. You know, you can go and find a safe society in a little town or out in the middle of nowhere. Don't rule out abortion as a manifestation of violence. And when even your so-called conservative politician is telling you that in order for them to win the offices, they have to compromise on abortion, that tells you the philosophy of society today. Because the earth is filled with violence and a lack of respect for the children of God who are unborn is key. And do you think that doesn't come from the enemy, Satan, the devil? Because what's the best way to destroy a man? Don't even let him be born. Kill him in the womb. He doesn't care how he kills him. He'll use every method, and that's just one. I guarantee you the earth is filled with violence. Whenever God has acted to destroy, it has been as a judgment upon Babylon. Oh, what? Yeah. When he destroyed the peoples of the earth with a flood, he was destroying Babylon. Again, it wasn't named Babylon. That didn't come until centuries later with Nimrod. But Babylon is not something physical. It is the spirit which goes all the way back to the rebels against God in his way. That's what Babylonianism is. And as I focused on yesterday, God is responsible for allowing Babylon to flourish on this earth for the time being. It is part of his will to permit it. Number one, because man needs to learn by his own mistakes. He could say, my way is good, and if you do this, I'm telling you, it's going to turn out bad, so don't do it. But people don't believe that. They have to write the experience. And in the millennium, they're going to have a 6,000-year history book of everything human beings tried to do to create an alternative to the plan of God to make themselves happy and to bring paradise to the earth, and it's going to be proven to be utter failure. But because they're free moral agents and they're made in the image of God, they have to prove that for themselves, which is why God is allowing it to go on for 6,000 years. It's part of the master plan. Isaiah 46, verse 9. So Babylon is the instrument of God to help convince man that his way will never work. There is no secret formula to create paradise without the law of God. Isaiah 46, verse 9, remember the former things of old. For I am God and there is none else. He says, I am God and there is none like me. There's no one as wise, there's no one as smart. There's no one equal to him to come up with a way of creating a happy ending in the future. Verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning. And from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand. I will do all my pleasure. Just to emphasize the fact that if Babylon exists on the earth and is allowed to take power and preeminence and to persecute human beings and to enslave them and to deceive them and to kill them, it's because they do it with God's permission. Because the buck stops with him. So you better be able to understand why Babylon fits in the overall plan of a loving, purposeful, merciful God. But the happy ending is that in the end, as we've already read, he's going to destroy it. When it has used, it's fulfilled its purpose in his plan, he's going to wipe it out because it is evil. Isaiah 45, last text. Isaiah 45, verse 5. I am the eternal, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. And boy, isn't that true. That they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. That's what God is after. He wants the acknowledgement of human beings that he really is God. And that he gets to make the rules, and it's either his way or the highway. that's what he's after. It's pretty simple. There is none besides me. He says, I am the eternal. There is none else. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. Oh, how many people stumble at that? This is the inspired word of God like any other word in the Bible. And it's not a mistranslation. He says, I make peace and create evil. I, the eternal, do all these things. Why does Babylon exist? By the express permission of God, because it is his tool to accomplish his greater purpose in the proving of human beings and accomplishing this glorious master plan that you and I are celebrating during this Feast of Tabernacles. The fact that Babylon exists is because God permitted it. You must understand this big picture in order to grasp what God is doing. Babylon is his tool, and when he is finished with it, he will destroy it. But not beforehand, which means, guess what? You and I have to contend with it. It's there, it's in our face, and we can't escape it. But we are commanded to come out of it, which means it must be possible, right? He didn't give us an impossible mission by the power of the Holy Spirit. But what is it? If you know what Babylon is, it's the spirit of rebellion. And if you believe the original doctrine on human nature that came out of God's true church in the 20th century, then you believe that even without Satan broadcasting today, that rebellion is in you and in me. So if you're going to come out of Babylon, what are you going to do? You're going to crucify your natural orientation. And if you do that, you don't have to worry about world politics or who does what on the world scene and the geopolitical movements of the wars or the whatever and If you're taking care of yourself, if you're defeating Babylon in your mind and replacing it with the mind of Jesus Christ through the Spirit, you are coming out of Babylon. How's that for a mission? Next time we're going to analyze the hallmarks of Babylon. I finally showed you what the origin is. We're going to look at the hallmarks, the real attributes of Babylonianism, which transcend all time and era. We'll do that tomorrow.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented Origins of Babylon in Ancient History, number 2. The third message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Babylon, Past, Present, and Future, given for the second day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Eugene, Oregon, October 1st, 2023.